It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more. Here are your hosts, Chris and Teresa.
Well, thank you for joining us for another broadcast of the Rose Chat Podcast. Now, tonight we'll be talking with Robbie Tucker of RoseMania.com, who's been growing, showing, and selling roses for many, many years. You know, he's also considered to be an expert when it comes to safety in the rose garden and as to what supplies and equipment's required when you begin a spray program in your garden.
That's right, Chris. Robbie is a nationally recognized amateur hybridizer of mini flora and miniature roses, including Daddy Frank, a Deep Red Exhibition mini flora that was awarded the 2010 Award of Excellence. He is the owner and creator of RoseMania.com, an online source for state-of-the-art chemicals and organic products for roses. Robbie's rose introductions include Miss Flippin's Cachet, Amy Grant, Ty, Dancing Flame, Conundrum, among other award-winning varieties. He has won Queen National Rose Shows 4 times. Robbie is an ARS consulting rosarian, a horticulture judge, past president of the Nashville Rose Society, and he and his wife Marcia live in Thompson Station, Tennessee, just south of Nashville, and we're so glad to welcome him to Rose Chat. Good evening, Robbie.
Hey, good evening. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's so good to have you. Robbie, that's a very impressive list of roses you've created. How did you get started as a hybridizer?
The quest started when my grandfather, Daddy Frank, died years ago. I decided that I would start that hobby, pick it up, and hopefully create a rose to name after him. It took me quite a few years to get the rose. But honestly, his death was what stimulated, the decision to go ahead and move forward and make, the commitment to do that. Which it's been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed hybridizing. I've done it for quite a few years. Not doing as much of it today, though.
Well, and we know it is a process, and that there's several steps in the process. What was your favorite part?
My favorite part was seeing the first bloom of every, new seedling that came up. And the worst part was throwing 99% of them away.
Oh, I can't even imagine. I'm sure it was like throwing away your children or something.
Well, the first year I think I had 28 seedlings, and one of those was just lucky enough to be Miss Flippin's. And if it hadn't been for Dennis Bridges and Susie, I probably never would have had any roses on the market, but they were kind enough to introduce Miss Flippin's and, really give me a chance to get my name out there. So I'll always be grateful to them for giving me my start.
Oh, that's wonderful. What advice would you give to someone? I'm sure we have listeners that are, thinking about starting the plunge and into hybridizing. How would you get them started?
Well, I mean, anybody can do it. If I can do it, certainly anybody can. The very best way is to have a greenhouse. It's hard to do it outside, but not impossible. And I made my first crosses all outside. But dealing with the elements and trying to keep the bees out of things, if you have a small greenhouse or separated area, that's the very best way to do it. But pick good parents. Ask people that you respect for their opinion. I haven't ever met a hybridizer that wouldn't share most of what they know. You think about some of these young people that have done so many things, like, David Clemens comes to mind. He, has really just put a lot of good roses on the market. Jim Spruill, he's awesome. Of course, we all miss Frank Minardella so much. He probably did more for miniature roses than anybody I can think of. Just talk to people that you that have roses that you like, and any of those will, you know, help guide you in what to do. Join the Hybridizers Association. Read the book. You know, the book that was written by a whole bunch of different hybridizers is an excellent way to, you know, to figure out how to do the ABCs of it. And the rest of it is just really having a good eye for roses that will be successful. The rest of it, God pretty much takes care of.
Isn't that the truth? Let's talk a little bit about Daddy Frank, the 2010 Award of Excellence. That's obviously near and dear to your heart. Tell us a little bit more about that rose.
Well, you know, not much to tell except that, you know, I love it, of course. It's a beautiful, beautiful red. I always thought Miss Flippins would be my best rose until I had, you know, Daddy Frank, and I like it better, mainly because it has more petals. It isn't good everywhere, but when it is good, it's a great show rose. I really miss rose showing. When we were running the greenhouse here and selling miniature roses, people pretty much frowned on us, you know, actually showing in the show. Not anybody would say that, but I mean, that's pretty normal. You know, you don't want to compete against the people that have a greenhouse full of roses, because then you start jumping to conclusions that maybe they're taking them out of the greenhouse. And, of course, if anybody ever had a greenhouse, you know the roses in the greenhouse are the ugliest ones you would ever have, because the colors aren't ever very vibrant. But one of the things, you know, Marsh and I hope to be able to get into doing now that we're not selling miniatures is showing again, because we miss showing roses with our rose friends out there.
Oh, it is fun to see those beautiful roses on the table, isn't it?
It is, and my grandfather was very, very close to me. He was the guy that when I was in trouble, I could go, you know, whine to, and he would explain that, you know, the world wasn't going to come to an end, and he remembered a time that my mom or my dad did something just as bad, and, you know, he was just a great guy, so I miss him. So it was really great to honor him with that rose. And I would really encourage people out there that are listening that have thought about, you know, hybridizing roses to do it. You know, don't expect to get rich and make a lot of money. You know, if that's your intention, well, run as far, far away, because that's not going to happen. But if you want to be able to have a lot of fun and have, you know, more than anything, the enjoyment of being able to name a rose after someone special in your life, now that alone is worth doing it, and I'd encourage you to do that.
Oh, I'm sure that's true. We had David Clemens on the show, and he said he certainly wouldn't go into rose hybridization for the money. So he would agree with you there. How long did it take to get Daddy Frank to the market?
Well, it didn't take any longer than me deciding to do it, because at that time, Rose Mania was selling miniature roses.
Mm.
So, you know, it was, we grew it out in our test garden for 3 or 4 years before, you know, we decided, you know, it was a rose that we wanted to enter into the Award of Excellence. And, of course, when you make that commitment to enter, at least under the old rules, when you entered into the Award of Excellence, then you could not name the rose for at least the 2 years that it was in the competition. So altogether, I guess probably 5 years from the time it, you know, was a seedling till the time that it was on the market, which is really not that long. And, you know, we still have people out there, you know, for the love of roses, you know, that are trying to, like them, that are trying to get miniatures out to folks. And, you know, I would encourage your listeners out there to support those people so that we still have a source for miniature roses, especially those of you that love the showing hobby.
Right, because a lot of the miniature, what I call the miniature rose houses, or the these independent business owners that provide miniature roses, have gone under in the last 5 or 6 years, I would say.
Yeah, it's not a well, it's a very hard business to make money. You know, we never did it for that reason. I did it strictly because of my big fat ego, to be honest and bare my soul here. You know, I wanted to have my varieties on the market, and the easiest way to do it was grow them and sell them myself. But I don't know that we ever made a dime in 8 or 9 years actually selling. Whenever you, you know, whenever you figure the cost of fuel to heat them and the pots and, you know, all the stuff that goes into it, and I don't want this to sound like whining because I don't regret doing any of it. It was a heck of a lot of fun. But it isn't very profitable. And, you know, you just... You know, it looks like it is. You've got so many smart people out there listening to your show that have done cuttings, and they know how easy that is. They're probably masters at it, and they think, golly, $10 or $11 to stick this piece of wood in, you know, this pot. But it's so much more than that, because a greenhouse is an environment that, you know, is full of spider mites and all kinds of critters trying to take them down all the time, and it's just... You know, it's just a labor of love. You have to really want to do it for the love of it, not for the money. And unfortunately, again, so many of our growers have gone out of business. The folks like, Michael Williams and Dennis Bridges and Northeast, they used to sell 40 to 60,000 roses, you know, a year. But most of those roses were wholesale. And when you think about that, I mean, wholesale, we never sold wholesale at Rosemania. We were always retail because we couldn't afford to. Wholesale roses, though, you societies out there, people that, if you can remember, they were, you know, $250, $3 a piece. And you just can't make a living doing that.
Sure.
So I think that's what happened. Sorry for the long answer.
No, you're fine. But, you know, I think, Bobby, that you must be, you know, with the business side, aside, that you must be so proud. And I went back and looked at our winners list for our local Birmingham Rose Society, and your introductions are all over that. Miss Flippins, Cachet, Amy Grant, Ty, you know, Conundrum. I don't think I've ever attended a rose show where there wasn't a bloom, at least one bloom of Conundrum.
Well, I am very proud. I'm, you know, and I mean that in a humble way, not an arrogant way. It's been a wonderful, you know, hobby for me, and you know, I still love roses, but you know, we haven't done a single cross here in the last 3 years, and my only regret is that I don't have a rose to name for my mother and for my wife. And the truth is, there just never has been one good enough.
Oh,
that's a great
answer.
And my wife is not standing here, so.
Well,
so if I ever started again, that would be the only reason that I, you know, that I would do it, would be to have a rose for them. I think my mom would really like to have a rose named for her, since my dad was one of the first roses that, you know, I ever introduced, which was Little Tommy Tucker, which was not a big deal rose, but it was a big deal to him. I haven't seen my dad cry but maybe twice in my life, and one of those two times was when we told him that we had named a rose for him, and that meant a lot to him. So again, if your listeners out there have ever thought that you wanted to do it, you can do it. There's nothing stopping you, and now more than ever, there's a demand for, you know, for new breeders to bring roses out there for the folks that want to show or just grow. We need people to do that, and I hope that your listeners would think about doing it.
That's true. That's so true. You shared that sweet story of your dad's crying. You know, we love to hear stories of people in roses. Do you have other stories of people in roses that you could share?
Well, you kind of caught me on the spot there. I'm sure I have 100, but not one thing comes to mind right at this second. Of course, as soon as you ask me a next question, 10 things will come to mind, so you'll have to give me a break on that one for a second.
Well, it is time for us to take a break, and we're just going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about how to get started with a spray program, and Robbie will share some safety tips. So stay with us. There's more Rose Chat Radio coming your way.
It's time to order roses for spring delivery, and S&W Greenhouse has just what you need. From knockouts to hybrid teas, S&W has the best. From weeks, star roses and plants, and new this year, a beautiful collection of David Austin English roses that are sure to make your garden the envy of the neighborhood. Check them out online at sw-greenhouse.com. Try Haven brand soil conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Well, we're back with Robbie Tucker of rosemania.com. Now, Robbie, we've had a lot of questions this summer, especially I know up Teresa in your neck of the woods, we've had folks that have been plagued with midge, and I wanted to ask you about that and get your thoughts on a cure for midge in your garden.
Well, it can be really bad, and I know that a lot of my customers have had a real hard time with that this year. Still, the best way to deal with midge, and this is my opinion, is that you have to attack it from two angles. You need to broadcast some good lawn and garden grub killer. I prefer anything that usually is made by Bayer, although it's not, you know, an absolute necessity, because usually anything made with Bayer will have imidacloprid, which is Merit in it, and that does a really good job. If you'll broadcast that in the bed and in the yard around the bed, and then if you'll follow that up with a spray of Merit, normally that'll take care of it. The problem with midge is they're so tiny we can't see them. So, you know, what we see is just the damage that's left behind, which, of course, is the little bitty black dead bud, you know, very, very early in a stage of its life sitting there that would have been a beautiful rose. It probably would have won you queen, but instead is, you know, has been demolished by this little wasp. So, you know, I recommend that if you normally deal with it, then just realize that you're going to have to do some preventative spraying. I don't like to spray insecticides. While I sell them and I make my living selling, you know, chemicals for roses, insecticides is something that while I do use them from time to time, it's only when I have to. They most of the time cause more problems than good. But if you have midge, you're going to have to do something about it. And so if you'll do it from a two-prong approach of broadcasting and spraying, I believe you'll be a long way ahead.
Wow, that's some great advice. Now, you're talking about spraying and the use of chemicals in the garden, and, you know, I've always been told by every rosarian that I've come across that there's a right way to apply chemicals and a wrong way to apply. And, you know, what tips could you share for our listeners tonight on applying chemicals in the garden? What are some of the safety concerns?
Well, first of all, thank you for asking me that question, because there's a lot of old wives' tales out there that I hear from people every day that were passed on from 20 years ago, back when a lot of our chemicals were oil-based. But now our chemicals aren't, for the most part, oil-based anymore. They're water-based. So I bet you many of your listeners still today believe that you shouldn't spray if the temperature is over 80 degrees. But that is no longer really valid. The only reason you wouldn't spray if the temperature is over 80 degrees is so you don't have a heat stroke. But if your plants are well hydrated, which is, you know, one of the things you need to do, you want to make sure your plants are watered well the day before you spray. You never want to spray when there's dew on the plant. Why is that? Because, you know, it's very important that the chemicals be mixed accurately. More is not better. You know, if it calls for a quarter of a teaspoon per gallon, that's what you ought to use, not a half a teaspoon, because you hate these mites so much you just want them gone, okay? You mix it per the instructions. If you're mixing more than one chemical, you still mix everything at the proper, you know, you can't believe some of the stories that, you know, that I've heard from people that where they think that if they're mixing two chemicals, they should mix them at half strength. You know, sometimes our common sense gets, you know, away with us and gets the best of us. But you always mix everything at full strength. Never spray when there's dew on the plants, because if you do, you're going to dilute the spray. You just wasted your money. And you need to remember that if it's a rainy day, if the spray dries before it rains, then you're protected. You don't need to spray again. But if the spray is still on the plant wet and it rains, then you're going to have to spray again. because your spray has just been washed off. Never spray so late in the day that the spray doesn't dry before it gets dark. That's another very important tip, because that's where you start having that. I know some of your listeners have seen burned edges on their leaves from spraying and thought that it was just the chemical they were using or the way they were mixing it, but more than likely it was because they're spraying too late in the day. You always want that spray to dry. So you want me to keep talking, or do you want to?
No.
I mean,
go right
I've got
ahead.
A whole lot to say, but I want to make sure I'm going down a path you want me to go down.
No, you go right ahead. You're hitting it dead on tonight.
Okay. Well, then what? Thank you. Well, what you need to do is you need to make sure that you use some kind of protection when you spray. I mean, I guarantee you, if you've ever swallowed a Coca-Cola or orange juice wrong and got it in your lungs, you didn't like it. And so just think what these chemicals, you know, do if they get in your lungs. And while, you know, you need to remember that if you can smell it at all, you're breathing it. It's not just the big droplets that are dangerous. It's the vapor itself. Just like if you were painting a car, you would wear a mask because you wouldn't want to breathe the vapors from the paint. You don't want to breathe the vapors from the insecticide. Now, I know it kind of stinks to put on a respirator and look like Darth Vader, and it kind of scares your neighbor sometimes because you think that, you know, they may think that you're, you know, polluting, you know, the neighborhood. But I think you just need to be honest with them. Let them know that you're a responsible person, that roses need some general care to be beautiful, and that you, you know, are going to take care of them and yourself. And when you spray the roses, you need to wear, at the very least, a long-sleeve shirt, long pants. Don't go out there in shorts and thongs, you know, and you need to wear a respirator. I like to wear goggles because you need to protect your eyes. And if you wear glasses, a lot of people think that gets them, you know, off the hook. But it really doesn't, because glasses aren't enough. You need to have safety shield. And I don't want to scare anybody and think, you know, because these chemicals they're not something that you need to be afraid of. They're just something that you need to respect. And as long as you will do that, then you don't have anything to worry about. You should never spray a chemical that's restricted unless you have a permit to do it. One of the things that irks me most is going around to Rose conventions and hearing people talk about products that they recommend that are restricted. Restricted products are restricted for a reason, because they require very special care. You know, on our site, we don't sell anything that's restricted, so you don't ever have to worry about that. But if something's restricted, I just recommend staying away from it. There's too many chemicals out there that are really good that aren't. Always wear a pair of gloves. Because, you know, and these little disposable gloves are the most wonderful things in the world. You can buy them at Home Depot or Walmart or a bazillion different places, but wear a pair of gloves. I recommend the disposables over the big heavy-duty chemical gloves, because the big heavy-duty chemical gloves will crack over time, and you won't know it because your hands are sweating so bad that the chemical's actually penetrating the glove. But just, you know, use common sense. The chemical is the most dangerous when it's in its most concentrated form, so you're more likely to get that on your hands than anywhere else. So,
right.
You know, just always wear gloves.
Yeah, we had a question from email this week in advance of the show. Someone made the comment in their email that they felt like that the rose chemicals were no more harmful to you than many of the, you know, cleaning chemical supplies that you would have in your home if you use it as directed. Do you agree with that?
Well, absolutely. You know, Bob Martin wrote a fantastic article several years ago where he actually got into the science of it. And you have to realize that a chemical like Bannermax is given the toxicity rating that it's given because of how harmful it is in its most concentrated state. But whenever you think about how it is whenever you actually dilute it to put it on the plant, it's a third of a teaspoon per gallon. So at that point, I don't have his article in front of me, so I may be exaggerating a small amount here, but it's less toxic than spraying sodium bicarbonate. But the toxicity rating it gets is based on, you know, its most concentrated state. And just another little tip, I hate to get off subject, but I need to say this. Most of your rose growers out there are going to be spraying propiconazole, which is either Bannermax or Honor Guard. If you're spraying that product, and if you're not, you need to be, because it gives you 2-week protection. One of the things you need to know is that, wow, is this one chemical where for sure more is not better? Because propiconazole is a growth retardant. And if you use it, if you've decided that, you know, 1/3 is not enough, you're going to bump it up to a 1/2 teaspoon, and then all of a sudden you notice that your plants aren't growing like they used to. The reason is you're putting too much propiconazole on them. So if you're spraying Bannermax every week, you're making a mistake. You never want to spray it more than every 2 weeks, and I don't recommend really using any more than 1/3 teaspoon per gallon. I know that's off the subject of safety, but that's just another little tidbit that people make that mistake all the time. They see these leathery-looking leaves on their roses, and they don't understand what's going on, and they're not growing like they're supposed to be, and they're just spraying the heck out of them. And I'm spraying every week, and I'm adding Bannermax, and I'm adding more, and I'm still not looking good. And the reason is they're using too much propiconazole.
Wow. Well, I think that all goes back to follow the manufacturer's directions. Follow the directions on it. Don't use a half, use a third if it says a third. And if you follow those directions, you're going to be okay.
You're absolutely right. Never mix two systemic fungicides together. So don't be mixed. You know, Cleary's is a great fungicide. It's actually one of the best that's ever been invented, but very few people use it anymore because it only has 1 week's of protection. You know, we all want to spray as little as possible. I know I do. But, you know, you would never mix a systemic fungicide with another systemic fungicide. But it's not a problem to mix a systemic fungicide with a contact fungicide like mancozeb or pentathlon or something like that. Same goes for insecticides. You start making a cocktail of multiple insecticides, then you've just given yourself a guarantee recipe to burn your plants. So just use common sense. You know, don't spray it unless you need it. Or, you know, I mean, if it's fall and you know you're going to have powdery mildew, get some Eagle in your mix, you know, and get ahead of it. But otherwise, just, you know, get on a 2-week schedule. Use as few chemicals as you have to keep your roses looking good. You know, water, 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 more than 5 hours of sun, and feed them every 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, that's some good advice. Now, you know, many folks that listen to our show are pretty new to growing roses, and wanted to talk a little bit about the spray chart that you publish every year, and how that can be used by people who are getting started in the garden as a guide.
You're talking about the spray reference chart?
Right.
Yeah, anybody, you know, can just go on the site and print that off. Anybody that orders from us also gets one sent to them. Basically, it's just a good guide. So many of these chemicals, you know, aren't meant to be sold on purpose to home and garden folks. It's perfectly legal and above board, let me just say that we don't sell anything that you can't legally buy. But the manufacturers would, you know, really they're making these for farmers. For most of your fungicides that are created today are created for turf grass. And if you start reading the labels on fungicides for roses, you'll see more about grass on golf courses than you will about roses. And that's what confuses people, because it's so hard to figure out how much per gallon when it's usually pounds per acre on the label. So one of the things we've done is just created this little spray reference, which just takes the guesswork out of it. And if you don't know how much to use, just print that off, tape it up inside the cabinet where you keep your chemicals for your roses, and then you won't ever have to, you know, worry about remembering it. Another good tip for your listeners is wherever you buy it, when you buy a new chemical, in most cases, not all, but in most cases, they'll be good 5 years from the day you open them. So always be sure and get you a Sharpie out and write the date on it, because the older you get, the faster time seems to go, and 5 years gets by before you know it.
It certainly does.
Well, if you start spraying with chemical that's over 5 years, especially things like miticides, let me just make that as an example, it's already, after 5 years, lost over half of its active ingredient. So you start spraying miticides at a concentration that either you have no idea what it is or is way below what the manufacturer recommends, then the mites are only going to become resistant to it, and it'll be just like breakfast, you know, for them. I mean, they will not respond. They will become immune to it, and then you'll have a very expensive product that won't work. So after 5 years, you know, just dispose of it properly. If you'll write the date on it, then you'll know where you stand. And 5 years is a pretty good time. I mean, some of these chemicals are expensive, but if you can spread them out over a 5 year period, then they actually become pretty.
I chat, you chat, and y'all chat about Rose Chat. It's the place to talk roses on.
Are you there?
I am.
Look like we had a little technical glitch there.
I just thought I was getting a little wordy.
No. No, that's not usually how we cut you off.
No, that's not it at all. Sometimes technology is our friend, and sometimes it is not.
Sure, it isn't. But, I wanted to ask you, though, a little bit about some of these awesome products that you've got on your website. You know, you sell a wide range of fungicides, insecticides, miticides, but you also have a whole page of beneficial insects, and I know our listeners would love to hear about some of those.
Well, we do offer those, and we actually sell a pretty good number of them. We don't grow those ourselves. We have a supplier that supplies those to us. If you buy beneficial insects, they are actually included in the price. All the prices are delivered. Included in the price is next day air shipment of those, so that they're guaranteed to arrive, you know, in good condition. People that don't want to use chemicals, it's a good way to put in your garden some of these friendly things like ladybugs and persimilis and lace wings and praying mantis to take care of aphids and spider mites. That's always, you know, the number one and two issue that most people deal with. Now, for our exhibitor friends, our new bane is chili thrips. And, one of the other products that's on the site that I really like and I've had a lot of good feedback about is this new fungus called Naturalis. I don't know if either one of you have heard of it. It's good. There's good and bad, and I'll give you both. The good is you could spray it even on vegetables and eat it the same day. So it's a very, very safe product. The bad is it is a fungus, so you can't mix it with your fungicide because your fungicide would actually start killing the fungus itself. So you have to spray it at a different time. So that's a little bit of a hassle. The other negative is because it's actually a living organism, the bottle is only good for a year. So your listeners out there that are interested in buying something that's really, really safe but does a heck of a job on killing insects, this Naturalis L is really awesome. It's also really good for chili thrips. And I started using it myself. What you'll find if you use this product is you'll spray it, and then the first week you'll think nothing's happened. Then after 10 days you reapply, and by the second week you'll be amazed at what's happened. I don't want to, oversell it, make it sound like it's, the best thing since sliced bread, but it really is a neat new way to take on any kind of insects like chili thrips and caterpillars and that sort of thing. It basically attacks their bodies and eats through their brains and kills them. And then while they're infected, they take the fungus back to their nest and infect everything there too. So that's pretty cool technology. And I really encourage, you know, your listeners to use as few chemicals as they have to. You know, yeah, it's my business, but I don't want to use any more of it than I have to keep my roses in top shape. Unfortunately, fungicides are pretty much a must, even with some of our more disease-resistant roses, at least in my area where we have such heat and high humidity.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm a little bit south of Birmingham, so we're in the same boat here. But, you know, as I browse through your site, there's also a great page that, you know, people you were talking about it started hybridizing, that sort of thing. But you've got a whole page of propagation aids as well for folks who want to propagate roses, and some products like Liquid Karma and Dip and Grow.
Well, that's right. And also, you know, I don't know if people are aware of this. A lot of people used to use a product called Messenger. I don't know if either one of you ever used it. The company Eden Bioscience that made Messenger, which is a Harpin protein, went out of business. They went bankrupt. And a new company bought the rights to sell that product, and that name is now changed to Axiom. So I only mention it for anyone that's been wondering where they could get their hands on the product Messenger. That now is sold as Axiom. So that's another thing, you know, that people might be interested in. Yeah, if you want to do cuttings, you know, you can get some Dip and Grow, and we have articles on the site on how to do cuttings. But, of course, you do too. You've got an article on just about everything I ever saw on your blog, which is just awesome. And I just want to say I really appreciate what you have done for roses and rose growers out there. We're very grateful.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. A couple of other things that I thought was pretty cool that you guys offer are some great gardening tools. Things like odd-sized measuring spoons. And, you know, growing up in the Deep South, my grandmother carried a pair of measuring spoons in her purse. So,
well, we carry
those. I can relate to that, yeah.
We carry those primarily because a lot of our friends and customers are math-challenged. You know, you said you like stories. I had a lady that was about 80 called and asked me, you know, how much Avid did she need to use to mix 2 gallons of solution? And I said, well, it's 1/4 teaspoon per gallon, so you just need to multiply that times 2. And she said, well, I'm not sure how to do that. And I said, well, 1/4 plus 1/4 equals, and she said, 1/8.
Oh.
And so I said, didn't do good with fractions, did you, in high school? And she said, well, no, I'm just old. And I said, well, I didn't mean to sound like I was making fun of you. Let me send you some spoons.
That is a great story.
So, you know, that's why we carry those. We have a lot of math challenge folks out there, and it's just easier for them to put 2 1/4 in than a half.
Yeah. Well, Robbie, in just a few minutes that we've got left, I'd love to hear your thoughts or advice for people who just want to get started growing roses. What would you tell those people?
I would tell you that anybody can grow them. I would tell you that, you know, you just need to decide. You need to pick out a good spot. You got to have some sunshine. If you can raise the bed, great. But if you can't raise the bed, that's fine too. Don't make the mistake of digging a swimming pool. If you live in a part of the country that has a lot of clay, you need to have a raised bed, because if you dig this nice, beautiful swimming pool, the roses are going to die because they need to have good drainage. So remember to have good drainage for your roses. Other than that, really, it's pretty simple. As exhibitors, we make it hard sometimes. But roses are easy to grow. Join a rose society. Ask people in the Rose Society for varieties that are more disease-resistant than others. Make sure that you're willing to spray at least once a month. If you're willing to do that, if you're willing to spend a little bit of money on at least some Miracle-Gro to feed them every 3 weeks, and if you're willing to water them on a frequent basis, you can have beautiful roses. Anybody can grow them.
Wow. Well, Robbie, I'll tell you, this time has gotten away from us, and I just appreciate so much you taking a few minutes out of what I know is a very busy schedule to come talk to us tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate what you do.
Well, thank you.
It's been a lot of fun.
Much.
Robbie.
Yeah. Now, we put links to rosemania.com and to the also the spray reference guide on our page at Blog Talk Radio. So you go to blogtalkradio.com/rosechat and click on this particular show to get those links. And, of course, you just visit rosemania.com anytime. And it's been a great show, hasn't it, Teresa?
Oh, it has. Just so much great information and lots of fun, too.
Well, I'll tell you, we're going to have an awesome show coming up next week. And in the weeks and months ahead, all the way taking us through the end of the year, we'll be looking at the 2014 rose introductions with folks like Michael Marriott from David Austin Roses. And we'll have folks from Weeks and all of the large rose houses. So we're looking forward to that.
Oh, yes. And we're going to have Lucas Jack come back and talk to us about what will be going on at Biltmore in the next year, so it's going to be a lot of fun. Well, it's been great to be with you, and until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com, or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.